inside the fruit, he said, there's a seed. And he said, if you plant it, it will grow. And he said, if you don't, it won't. So my point is, where do you plant the seed? Is the decision you make, that's the seed. And you plant it in love where all things originate. You fall in love with it. And the things that create fear, that's where the power of letting go comes in. So my question is for people, are you truly in love with what it is you want to become? Or is it just a one-night stand for you?
Welcome, everybody, to Optimum Ideation Podcast. We're going to close out season one with Mr. Jim Britt. And very glad to have you, Mr. Jim. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Thanks for having me here, Tim. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I figure I'd give you a little quick intro, and then we'll just go into some questions.
All right.
Well, from picking cotton to pumping gas to being a factory worker to direct sales and now having 45 plus years career marketing in marketing, Jim is the author of 15 best-selling books and numerous number one international bestsellers. He is internationally recognized in business and life as a strategist who is highly sought after as a success coach and keynote speaker for all audiences. And we could go on and on, but I think his reputation precedes him. And so I think the audience would just love to maybe hear some of your insights and hear what you have to say.
Sure, let's launch it.
All right. So, Mr. Jim, you've had an incredibly successful career in network marketing and entrepreneurship. Can you share with us the most significant turning points that set you on the path to success?
Yeah, well, my network marketing experience was in the early years, and I'll never forget that because it kind of set up the platform for the rest of my life. I joined up in a company, and I was a youngster, didn't know anything about selling, and worked in a factory, picked cotton, worked in a gas station, that type of thing. And so knew nothing about business or anything, and certainly not sales. And the person that sponsored me into that company said, your job is talking to people. He said, if you talk a little, you're going to earn a little. If you talk a lot, you learn a lot. I said, well, how much is a lot? He said, 10 a day. And I said, okay, that's what I'll do. So I quit my job the next day, put in a week's notice at the factory, and started talking to 10 people every day. Well, first of all, it took me about 2 weeks because it cost me $4,000 to get started, and I only had $9. And I went to 23 banks and loan companies before I found one that finally loaned me the money. And so I set out to do 10 a day. And I did that for a year. So I talked to some days more than 10. I talked to over 3,650 people in a year, and I made one sale. And I'm standing in my kitchen, a turning point for me. I'm standing in my kitchen, looking out the window, thinking, what am I going to do? My home had been foreclosed. I had 5 days from living on the street. Both of my vehicles had been foreclosed, so I couldn't go anywhere. Most of my furniture had been taken. And I had a wife and a child, and I had 15 cents in my pocket and no food in the house. And I stood there for a moment and said, what am I going to do? And I thought, well, I could go back to the factory. They'd hire me back. And my first thought was, I can't even get there. I don't have a car. But my second thought was, nope, I'm not going back. Because I saw people in that business making money. If nobody was making money, I probably would have just quit. But I kept seeing these people. I thought, I'm smarter than they are, at least as smart. And I work harder, and they're making all the money. And so I decided at that moment, I said, nope, I'm not going to quit. And I don't know why I did that, but it was such a firm decision that I'm going to make this business work and I'm going to get rich at it. And I didn't know what rich was back then. $1 million. I didn't know. And anything over what I had was rich in some ways. But what happened in the next 5 days was just amazing. First thing was the only sale that I made. I went and called on that person, and I walked 3 miles with 5 gallons of carpet shampoo, and hoping he would buy it because it was just over $20, and that would put money in my pocket for food. And sure enough, he did. But he also, it won't take a lot of details here, but he also offered me a great opportunity because I'd done a lot of work for him back in high school and cleaning up around construction projects. And I knew all the building trades. And so I helped him out in a lot of ways. Anyway, offered me an opportunity and I took him up on it. And the opportunity furnished me with $300 a week, a car to drive with all expenses, an opportunity that if I finished it on time, it would earn me $60,000. And every day that I didn't finish on time, it would earn me at less $1,000 a day. And every day I finished it before the six the 60,000, I would add another $1,000 a day bonus. And I had 1 year to finish it, and I finished it in 8 months, and I ended up with that, some ownership, an apartment complex. And it also furnished me with a 3-bedroom furnished apartment. So I had everything I needed. I had the apartment, I had furniture, I had a car, I had expenses, and I had $300 a week coming in, which was quite a bit of money back then. And then the other thing that happened was somebody from the direct sales company showed up, and they spent about 2 hours with me. And that 2 hours launched me off into a business that earned me, over the years, it's earned me millions of dollars. And I just never forget that, because the foundation of whatever it is you want to accomplish in your life starts with that decision. And it's got to be so firm that it doesn't allow for anything less than that. And I totally believe that that's what set me up for my life experiences that I've had now.
Yeah, it's so true in business. Whenever you might have a vision, an idea of something, but until you have that serious, this is it. And I'm not taking no for an answer, and you just go after it. And this is the goal, this is the dream.
Yeah, and also I discovered over the years, every time I hear somebody say, "That's my goal to do that," to me that almost feels like I'm going to try to do that. My goal, instead of deciding you're going to do it, that's the foundation. See, the goal is the incremental steps, I think. You decide to write a book, and the incremental steps is a chapter at a time. My goal is to get a chapter done this month. But you have to have that decision, because that's a foundation, and it determines how you show up to the world and how the world shows up to support you in your endeavor.
Very well said. Yes, sir. In your discussions on the power of letting go, can you share what aspects of your life you had to release to achieve your personal growth?
Probably all aspects of my life. You know, what I discovered years ago is that, we all have a core belief that we have about ourselves, and it's based upon the programming that we have, that we've done over the years. Our parents start the programming, and then we build upon that, and we learn new things, and the more we repeat things, that become habit patterns. And we probably have hundreds of habit patterns that we couldn't live without. How you put your pants on or something. I mean, you always put the same leg in first. That's a habit. You get in your car, it's a habit. You know how to drive it. You don't have to relearn. So there's so many things that we have that are habit patterns, but those are the positive ones. We also have the negative side. Those become habit patterns that become second nature to us. We don't know we have them. I mean, we have no clue. We may think, "Yeah, I'm always late. I'm a procrastinator," or whatever. We may see things like that and kind of joke about them, but it really is a habit pattern, and it can be very, very destructive. And the reason we have that habit pattern is because we have a core belief about ourselves that's a blind spot, and we can't see it. And it's been developed over the years. And so when you mentioned the power of letting go, when you're caught in that belief and you can't see it, you're disempowered. You're moving forward, you see the problem, that's a given. You see that you're broke or you're struggling financially or your relationship's in conflict or you need to get healthy, or you can see the problem. And we even go out searching for answers. But what we find is that core belief hitting us right in the face every time we do. And so once you decide what you want, the power from letting go comes from, okay, I've decided I want to do this. Now, every action you take from this point forward is going to move you toward that or away from it. Success at anything is that simple. Just think about it. But you have to decide first. If you don't know what you want, then it doesn't matter. Just take off in any direction. But once you decide, that's the key. Is it moving you in the direction you want to go? And when you go in the direction you want to go, you're going to be faced with obstacles. You're going to be faced with little failings along the way. And what do you do with that? You're going to be faced with rejection and things like that. Well, that's where the power of letting go comes in. People say, well, no, it's not. Let's say that I have this mouse in my hand. Does that mean I have to hold it in my hand the rest of my life? And the answer is no, I can lay it down. Something happened to you in the past. It's not happening to you now unless you bring it into the present. Then it's probably more real than it was in the past because you built it up on it over the years. So there's real power in letting go. And it applies to any area of our life. Let go of the things that distract you. Let go of the things over which you have no control. Let go of the things that's not moving you in the direction you want your life to be.
Yeah, very well said. Yeah, and then whenever you find these items, these things that you're covering up inside yourself, and you say, wow, it was me that was blocking this. And then it's like, poof, peel that layer off.
Yeah, I had an experience many years ago. I think I wrote about it in one of my books, but I was going through conflict in relationships, and I'd gone through a divorce. My two kids lived in another part of the country, and I was in the bathroom one day, and I started to leave, and as I walked out, I see the big mirror, and I catch my reflection in the mirror, and I stopped and I looked. And if you've ever tried to do that, look at yourself. I mean, truly look at yourself in the mirror. Look into your own eyes. And I found myself trying to look away. And finally, I put my hands up against the mirror, my face about this far from it. And I said to myself, I'm going to look at you and you're going to look at me. And I truly looked into my own eyes. It's almost like you see your own soul. And then these questions came to mind. What's it like for my children having a parent like me? What's it like for my students in my seminars hearing from me? What was it like for my wife having a husband like me? And man, if you ask those questions and you really listen, you get answers. And sometimes you don't want to see it. You don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear the truth, but the truth will set you free. And that's what that means, is once you see the truth, you are free. And it's the truth behind who you are, is the way I see it.
With my first children, I was still I went to school, I went to college, and I was in a fraternity, and we were all the whiskey drinkers, and that really stuck with me for many years. And being in pipeline construction, it didn't help. And so when I first got married, I was still drinking, and then I just kind of had this reflection, like you said, sitting there looking in the mirror. I'm 300 plus pounds at that time, and just I have a whiskey drink there. I'm not happy with myself, even though I'm running companies and managing companies and people, making good money, I was just not happy. And it was like looking in the mirror at that and just realizing this is not who I want to be or who I should be. And it, like you said, it's just such a wake-up call to sit there and look at yourself and be disgusted and peel those layers off of this is not who I want to be.
Well,
Now we're making the decision to make these changes.
yeah, and I think the, it, if you want to become somebody different, if you, or I should say, if you want to have something different in your life, you've got to become somebody different.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the other way around. It's like I asked a group one time, which comes first, your success? Or, or let's say if you wanted to be a millionaire, which comes first, making the million so that you feel successful, or feeling successful to make the million? And most of them chose the first one. Once you make the million, you'll feel successful. I said, no, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
You've got to feel that. You've got to become a millionaire before you're going to bring that into your life. Because if you don't, you're not going to see the opportunity showing up around you. Why would you? If you
Yeah.
haven't decided to have a certain thing, why would you see an opportunity? So, if you're just giving it a try, well, that's not going to help things show up either,
Yeah.
except people that support you in giving it a try. And if you look up the word try in the dictionary, the definition is to struggle. So let's don't be trying things.
Yeah. It's so funny how our language is so tied up in it, almost like spelling reality.
Well, that's a good point because if you take a series of letters and put them in a sequence of some kind, that's called spelling, right? You spell a word. And if you look up spelling in the dictionary, the definition is to cast a spell. So words cast spells. It's like I'm casting a spell on you, but even more so, I'm casting one on me for what I'm talking. You
Yeah.
know, so we you hear it, I hear it, and I'm saying it at the same time. I feel it. So, and if you take a series of words and put a period at the end, that's called a sentence.
Yeah.
Like if you tell a child, you'll never amount to anything when you grow up, period.
Yeah.
You've just sentenced that child to a life of possible pain,
Yeah.
hardship. So it's and then if you take a series of, it's a series of sentences, that becomes a paragraph, and pretty soon that becomes a whole book, and that's your life story.
Yeah.
So the question is, what do you want your life story to be? What legacy do you want to leave?
You have authored multiple best-selling books and worked with some of the world's top entrepreneurs. Now, what inspired you to share your knowledge through writing and coaching?
Well, it's not just through writing, but writing is something to me. Writing is like a calling card. It's like a business card. I've written 15 books, but and I'm on number 16 now. I actually never thought I could write a book. I dropped out of high school in mid 10th grade, and English was my worst subject. And I'm still not sure I know the difference between a noun and a pronoun or adverb or whatever, but I've got a good editor, so I can straighten that out for me. But I that direct sales company I was in, what really came out of that is Jim Rohn was the trainer. And we became best of friends. And later we ended up as a business partners for quite a few years. Tony Robbins actually worked under my direction there for about almost 5 years, four or 5 years. But that got me into the speaking business. I've been a professional speaker. It's been my main focus for 44 years. I started out marketing Jim Rohn, but that phased me into speaking, and coaching just kind of evolved out of speaking. People came up to me and said, would you work with me one-on-one? And initially I said, no, I probably turned down 20 people and or more. And one day somebody convinced me to do it. And about 3 weeks later, she referred me 12 people, and 11 of them signed up for me to coach. I didn't call it coaching. That word wasn't even used back then. So, but it inspired me. I just I felt a desire to want to help people in some way. I always did growing up, and my mom was like that. I mean, I never heard my mom say a cross word about anybody ever, or my dad, and then they just never did. Grew up in a very, very loving family, very poor, but very loving family, very fortunate. No drugs, alcohol, nothing, none of those things, but we were poor. But I never forget my dad. Every time he would leave the house, even if he was going to the garage in the backyard, he would kiss my mom before he left the house every single time. And I didn't think much about it then. I thought, oh, that's just something you do. But looking back on it, that was a pretty good example, So, yeah, it's it kind of drove me, and I met with a fellow about a year into my speaking business, and he said, Jim, if you'll live your life this way, he said, every time you meet a person, he said, it doesn't matter who they are, doesn't matter what the situation is. It could be on an airplane, it could be at church, it could be at a barbecue, it could be at a wedding. He said, anywhere you meet a person, he said, always be thinking, what can I do to help that person? He said, if you do that, he said, you'll never lack for money, you'll never lack for friends, and one day you'll build a network worldwide. And I took that to heart, and that's what I've been doing for the last 44 years. So everything I do, I've launched 28 businesses over the last 44 years, and most all of them were successful except for two, and to different degrees. But I just every one of them was something to do to help people in some way, whether it was opening up wellness clinics. I had 26 of those, all about helping people with their health. It's just always uppermost mind. Somebody tries to present some opportunity technology for me, and I'm going, I mean, I struggled to find a long time, but I mean, I make up, that's what I do.
It's servant leadership is one of the most rewarding things. I wound up I always wanted to help people too my whole life, and I felt like I wasn't able to do enough of it just being focused in pipeline construction, midstream oil and gas. And so I always loved the recruitment aspect of my fraternity days, and I always wanted to do something with that. And so we formed a partnership with some of my college buddies, and wound up making a couple million, during these crazy past few years, by recruiting and promoting people, and thousands of interviews during this time frame. I feel like I should have like a Purple Heart or something from this, but it's been really rewarding. It's been like the silver lining to it all,
Well, your story would it makes a great story, from going getting your education and building pipelines, and then now you're helping people. It's I think a lot of people stop themselves because they just don't have the confidence, or they don't believe that they're worthwhile, or what they know is worthwhile. But man,
I did
it
it for
only
many
takes one
years.
little idea to change somebody's life.
I didn't for many years. I didn't really come from much either, and so I left home at 17 and just put myself through college, and worked my butt off full time, but I've realized that you have to network, and you have to meet these people that are doing these things that you're not familiar with. And I got to join a fraternity, put myself through that, paid my dues, but I got to see how they, all these people lived and how their families act behaved, and help their kids out, and give them that rung up while I'm over here working, they're at the bar, so but nonetheless, that networking was key, because now I've got friends and connections all over the place now.
Yeah, you know, when I first started in the speaking business, Jim Rohn was unknown. He was a, a trainer in a direct sales company, and we made him pretty well known in California. We couldn't go anywhere that Jim or I, either one or a few of the others that were real close. Pretty much anywhere you go, you were known someplace. But when I first started, I did I nobody knew who I was, and I didn't know how to get that across to people. And maybe I was a nobody. I mean, in today's world, if you look at social media, everybody on there is your competition. Even somebody posting their breakfast is competing with you, because they're competing for space and for
It's
likes and for,
captivating.
well, they're all looking for the same thing, which is attention. If you don't stand out as a key person of influence in your field, you get lost in all the noise. So when I first started, of course, we didn't have social media or anything else. I thought, at one point, a friend of mine managed, it was a partnership with Tom Hopkins, the number one sales trainer in the world at that point. And I went over and met with my friend. His name is Tom Murphy. And while I was there, I met Tom Hopkins. And he was well known, and I ended up doing some seminars along with Tom. And then while I was there the second day, Dennis Waitley comes in. And Dennis was really popular back then with his program, The Psychology of Winning. I think the Knight Gokonat company sold over $100 million worth of his programs. Well,
Nice.
we connected up, and I got on stages with Dennis. And then Dennis and I started a little company on the side, and we became best of friends. And one day he says, "Hey, Jim, you want to go to New York with me?" I said, "What's in New York?" I'd never been to New York at the time. I said, "What's that?" And he said, "Well, the Nightingale Connect company is, they're doing a little meeting there, and I'm supposed to be there." And I thought maybe, because we work together, it might be a good thing to come. And I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, how does that work?" And he said, "Well, you got to buy yourself a plane ticket, and we're staying at the Waldorf Astoria, and probably the most expensive place in New York at the time." And I didn't have much money, but I committed to it and flew back, stayed at the Waldorf for a few days. And at the meeting, Earl Nightingale was there, Og Mandino, Brian Tracy, Barbara Walters. There was a whole ton of people. I can't even remember all of them, that were all top name speakers. And I got to know every single one of them. So I've done seminars with Earl Nightingale and Og Mandino and Brian Tracy and
How
Les
cool.
Brown and Bob Proctor and people like that. So that's how I branded myself. I shared the stage with these people. And then somebody told me, they said, "Create a media kit that's so good that whoever gets it thinks it's their fault because they don't know you." And I thought, that kind of makes sense in a way. So I created this media kit. I mean, it was classy. I got so many, even if I didn't get the job, I'd get comments on my kit. So it was very classy. So that's how I started. And pretty soon I'm getting gigs. And I remember my first real good paid gig was a red carpet real estate company. And Jim Rohn was booked in to speak at their big event. And he got stranded in Australia and couldn't get back for a few days. So he said, "You gotta call the guy and tell him I can't make it." The guy was really upset. I said, "Hey, it's not his fault. The plane got canceled and he can't get another flight out." And so he goes, "I don't know what I'm gonna do, man." He said, "Do you have anybody else that speaks?" And I said, "Yeah, me." And he said, "Are you any good?" I mean, I'm not gonna say no. I said, "Well, yeah." And back then, Jim Rohn's fee was $7,500 plus first class expenses. And he said, "What's your fee?" And I didn't even know what to say. And I was kind of fumbling. And I said, "Hey, there's somebody at my door right now." I said, "Can you hold just one second? I need to find what, So I put him on hold. I'm going, "What's my fee? What's my fee? I'm not as good as Jim Rohn. I can't charge $7,500." So I came back on and I said, "Oh, thanks for all. I'm sorry. Sorry, it took a few minutes there." But I said, "My fee, you were asking, it's $5,000 plus first class expenses." He said, "Okay, you got it."
Awesome.
And after I hung up, I went, "Whoa, 5 grand for 90 minutes?" And That's the least I've ever charged. After that, I'm going, well, I'm worth 5 grand, Just kept taking it up from there. But yeah, it was interesting, But man, if you just stick with something and something you're passionate about, because it's, I mean, that's really what it's about, being passionate about what you want, making a decision to have it and go after it, man. Take action today. Whatever action you can take, don't put it off. Don't wait for this to happen or that to happen. Whatever you can do today to move the needle forward, do it.
Yeah, that's kind of why I jumped, is I thought we were in a good market, 5 years back, under a different president. And I said, man, if I don't go now, I don't know if I'll ever be able to have a company in the future. And then I get these little tidbits from social media, and it's, hey, you need to start yesterday, kind of like what you're saying now. And so I just said, you know what? I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I mean, there's always a way, but there's always something in your way as
Yeah, there's
well.
always Murphy's Law there too.
Yeah, but I mean, if it was easy, everybody'd be doing it. But
Exactly.
it's simple, but it's not easy because you're confronting your own fears, and fears are just made up. They're just stories that you make up in your mind. They're not real. I mean, it's funny to me that we're afraid of our own thoughts. And we make up these fears. I'm going, somebody challenged me one day and said, well, some fears are real. I said, no, they're not. He said, well, what if a lion or a tiger or something is chasing you through the woods? Wouldn't that be a real fear? And I said, no, you're making it up in your mind. What's going to happen when he catches you? I said, now I might run too, but still it's made up in your mind. I said, maybe he's going to lick you. I don't know. Maybe he's going to, maybe he's going to eat you too. I don't know. But I think when we step on a stage, if you look at it, do you believe that you have the DNA of your parents in you?
I do, but I don't like to think that external factors or anything, even down to our DNA, is like what just defines you. I like to think
Well,
that
it
maybe,
doesn't. It doesn't define you, but we have certain traits like our parents had. And we look at our grandparents. I have the traits of one of my grandfathers. He was kind of in the same business I'm in, but in a different way. And I always looked up to him. But I must have traits of my great grandfather too, and my great great grandfather, and all the way back until we lived in a cave. And our dominant thought, I would imagine, was how to kill something to eat and how to keep from being killed and eaten. Two dominant thought processes. So when you walk up on a stage for the first time and you feel that fear, it's really kind of a fear of being killed and eaten by the audience. I mean, it kind of is. I mean, because you're making it up and you have nothing to base it on. If you've never been on stage, first time I got up to introduce Jim Rohn, I'll never forget it. There were about 1,000 people in the audience, and I totally was like I went blind. It was like everything was kind of a halo around everything. I couldn't see people's faces. And I could hear my voice coming out, but it sounded like it was coming from outside me to the people, not from inside me. The strangest fear I've ever felt. And it was fear. I mean, it was crazy. And the two things that if you're a speaker or ever go on stage, the two things that we want when we walk on stage, we want approval from the audience, and we want to be in control. But the problem is, when you need approval, you get none. And when you need to be in control, you're out of control. So when you let go of the need for approval, you get the approval. When you let go of the need to control, you're in control. Because you got to control yourself. You can't control the audience anyway. So you, and that's going to pass down to the audience, and that weaves throughout our lives. Even things that don't work in our lives very well, is always one of those two needs, either approval or control. Even somebody in an abusive relationship is a good example. You got one controller, the other one needs attention. The one needing attention is willing to get beat up to get it. The one in the controller is looking for somebody like that so that they can feel like they're in control. And it's a perfect match. But if that person needing approval lets go of that need, this person will leave because they feel it energetically, they feel it. And I've worked with hundreds of women that were in abusive relationships, and they can get out of it that fast, and that person just goes away. It's almost like a miracle that takes place.
It's we're all energy, and so you gotta work with what you got and master it. Master your
That's it, man.
destiny.
Mastering your energy, because that's time is really the most important thing that we have. And it's elusive, and it's fleeting, and it's passing us by ruthlessly. And it doesn't wait. So you gotta execute. You gotta do it now. And not piddle around with, imaginary fears and things like that.
I've always felt that way. I've always been like a mass producer as well. So I watched one of your interviews where you were working on an assembly line and you were doing like the work of four people. That's kind of how I've always been, is like, I've got this time, I'm going to do the best with what I can. And before you know it, you're doing the work of several people,
Yeah, I always everything that I did, I always would strive to beat my own record. I never tried to beat anybody else, but I tried to beat my own record. I mean, when I was picking cotton, started at 6 years old picking cotton, and every day I'd go to the cotton fields. I'd try to pick at least a pound more every day. I didn't always make it, but I tried. I was always like, I'm in a hurry. I got to get this. I got to get 50 pounds today or something. And then when I got to the gas station, I would service people, like, I mean, check their tires, check their oil, sweep out their car, did all kinds of things, wash their windshields, and it was always pleasant. And when we, I'd lube a car or change oil filters and things, I was so fast. I could lube oil and filter a car in less than 5 minutes. And people would say, "Are you sure you did that?" But I was so fast. And in the factory, yeah, I did the work of 4.57 people. That was my best month. And I got a little bonus. It was like an extra $5 at the end of the week or something. But I didn't do it for that. I did it because I just kept trying to beat myself, it made me, over the years, every time I coach somebody, or every time I present a seminar, whether it's online or offline, I always ask myself, how did I do it? How could I have done it better? And if you do that, you always find, not always, sometimes you find things that you can improve upon. And that's really key in our professions, to get better and better. Compete with ourselves, not with competition out there. Compete with you.
I love it. So let's talk a little bit about cracking the rich code. You had mentioned networking with different class individuals, was crucial. Could you elaborate on how the program Cracking the Rich Code plays a role in your transformation?
Well, I have two Cracking the Rich Codes. I have one that's an online automated coaching program, and what it's designed to do is change your relationship toward money. Because in reality, 90-95% of the population doesn't have enough money worldwide, and they all want more, but the problem is they don't have a good relationship with money. You go out there, and I talked to somebody the other day. She helped a company go from $1 million a year to $10 million a year, and she coached them for five coaching sessions, and she got paid $500 for that.
Oh no.
And I said, "That's not fair." She said, "Well, what do you mean it's not fair?" I said, "You got 500, they got 10 million." I said, "You should have made some thousands of dollars off of that, whatever that is,
For
but
sure.
I said, you look at your value. That's really the key. But some people have a bad relationship with money. They're afraid to ask for money. And you got to have the confidence in what you do that's going to create that result, and then ask to get paid for it. because you deserve to. Until you get up in front of a group of 1,000 people, and let's say if I do one locally, it's like $20,000. And people say, well, that's a big fee for 90 minutes. I've just helped 1,000 people.
Yeah.
No, and I know they're going to walk up out of there with value. Yes. So you got to look at yourself and say, what's my time worth? You know, how much do I charge for my time? I mean, you only have a limited amount. Yeah. So that's really key, is changing your relationship toward money. And the way the program is designed, you know, we learn our habit patterns over time through repetition. The way this program, it's a 4-month program, and it's designed to give you repetition of certain things every day. You get an audio message, you get a weekly video, you get a monthly master lesson, you get an audio that you listen to for 5 minutes every single morning for 4 months, and it just reprograms your mind.
Yeah.
So that's to me, cracking the rich code is just changing your relationship with money. My other cracking the rich code real quickly is a book series. I'm in the 12th volume of that. My partner is Kevin Harrington from the TV show Shark Tank. Tony Robbins endorsed it. And we have 20 co-authors in each book, plus Kevin and I. So it's really designed as a PR, marketing, branding, lead generation system for people in the coaching, speaking, or entrepreneurial field, mainly in the field of helping others live a better life in some way. It's a pretty cool series.
Yeah.
Plus we have a mastermind every month with the group. And so it's got a lot of real benefits to it to help people.
Heck yeah. Yeah. It sounds amazing. And how much does it cost to join the program?
My program online right now is like 400 and I think it's set at $495. It's like a special. It's usually about $1,000 or so, but it's $495 right now.
There
and yeah, in the book series, it's a little more, but it's $6,000 to have a chapter in the book.
Okay.
But you know, when you really look at it, one of the problems that new people in the industry of helping people, speaking, coaching, that type of thing, new people lack credibility.
Yeah.
So what if you're on the cover of a book with Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank, with myself? I've been named as one of the top 20 success coaches in the world, one of the top 50 speakers. Tony Robbins endorsed it. And then your picture is on the cover, right? Yeah. In the center with three of the top professionals. So that increases your brand, increases your credibility. It stands out on social media. You get one client from it, and you know,
sure,
you're home free. And then you got a mastermind session every month to learn from one another and collaborate. And you know, it's like you do a podcast. You know, sometimes I could imagine it's a struggle finding people to be on your podcast. I mean, people you want. Heck,
sure.
We got 220 co-authors that they cross podcast each other.
Yeah.
I mean, if any of them want somebody on their podcast, I got 219 people right now that they could invite that would love to be on the podcast. So
yeah,
kind of a cool group, really.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. You've been a success strategist for over 300 corporations worldwide. Could you tell us about a particular company or an individual whose transformation and success through your coaching or mentorship was truly amazed you?
Yeah, I could tell you a couple of them right off the top of my head as you're talking. One of them was a company up in Oregon, a direct sales company, and they were in the business of selling blue green algae in capsules, highly nutritious and all that. So, but they were struggling. They were at about $300,000 a month in sales. And when I went in there, I said, you know, we can take this to tens of millions a month. And I told them, I said, a year from now, I said, they had to harvest this algae at a certain time of year. I said, you need to crank up your harvest site because you're going to run out. And now we won't run out. I'm going, okay. So I took them to 23 million a month. From 300,000 a month, and they ran out at the end of the year. They were out for 4 months, and they still stayed in business.
Yeah.
Which was major. Another company in Canada, same thing. I uh I went in there consulting, and it's kind of funny because I told them what I could do. They were at about the same 400,000 a month or something, and they were about 12 years old. And today they're doing 300 million a year, maybe a little more than that now. But I went in there and told them what I could do, and the director of marketing was there, and the CEO was there. They listened, and then the director of marketing said, "Well, we'll get back with you and let you know if we want to work with you." And the CEO, he says, "Shut up." He said, "This guy knows more about what we're doing than both of us put together." He said, "Tell him whatever he wants, give it to him. Write him a check right now. We'll drop a contract later."
Yeah.
So that was a pretty sweet deal. But the main thing is they're out there doing 300 plus million a year and
Yeah.
selling a nutritional track product. So I've had a lot of successes like that. I've had, I go into companies and a lot of them think I'm brilliant, but I'm really not. I can see things they can't see. It's like that core belief that somebody has that's a blind spot. They can't see it, but I guarantee you, I can pull it out of that person and make them see it.
Yeah.
And the same way going into a company, there's certain things that work and certain things that don't. And if something's not working, to me, it's not, it's not what's wrong, it's who's wrong. Because some who created that what doesn't mean they're a bad person. It just mean that they created something that didn't work. So I look at the who's wrong. The one company that I went into, I interviewed everybody in the company just to kind of see who was there. And when I came back and met with the CEO, he said, "What do you think?" I said, "Well, you got a pretty good group of people." I had about 30 people, I think. And I said, "But there's one guy," I said, "John," I said, I don't know, man." I said, "I don't trust him." And he said, "Oh, he's like our son. He's been with us since day one." I said, "Okay, man, I'm just telling you, I just got that feeling." And I said, "And you need to fire your president." He said, "That's my wife." I said, "Well, she'll be the downfall of your company because she's such a micromanager." I said, "When you grow and get big, she'll know every phone call that comes into that company, and that'll destroy the company. She's not going to be willing to delegate anything." She was just a, I said, "Right now she's holding the company together, but later she'll blow it apart." And sure enough, they did. And they found out later on, they went in one morning real early. The CEO did, like 5 o'clock in the morning, and found a fax, and it was from Japan. And the guy that I didn't trust was shipping $40,000 a month worth of product to Japan and keeping the money.
Oh no.
So
Oh
I was right on with both of those. But yeah, I don't do a lot of consulting anymore, or more advising. I don't go in and spend time with the company, like I'm there. I might go in and do training and things like that, and do various locations, or might design a custom training program. I just did one just about 2 months ago for a company.
no. Having been partners with the late Jim Rohn and working with Tony Robbins, you've been involved in shaping the success of other influential figures. What have been the key lessons that you've learned from mentoring such high-profile individuals?
Well, when I was mentoring them and working with them, I didn't know they were high profile. But over the years, I've gotten to know these people, and they all become friends of mine. Les Brown and Bob Proctor, and some are no longer around, like Bob. But they all became friends of mine. But I interviewed 12 mega millionaires for a TV infomercial I was doing about 6, 7 years ago, and took a camera crew around the country. Spent over $1 million putting it together. And by the way, it was one of the two businesses that didn't work for me.
Really?
It was yeah, it was beautiful, but it just
Yeah.
didn't work as an infomercial.
It
But
probably helped
I
you in
turned
your
it
other
over.
businesses, though.
Yeah, I think it was not produced correctly. I turned it over to somebody else to produce it, and I probably should have done it myself. But anyway, I interviewed these mega millionaires, and they all had to be worth around 200 million, and they had to started with nothing, and they were all in different industries. And it was pretty amazing that they all had the same traits in common.
Yeah.
And I had the same traits. I looked at myself at that time. But, real quickly, I know we don't have time to go into them in detail, but one was a desire for something more in their life, desire to help other people, desire to create, desire to have more, desire to become more. They all had that strong, burning desire.
Yeah.
Secondly, they were decision makers. When they decided to do something, they went after it. They didn't hesitate. They look at it and go, let's go. And if it didn't work, pull the plug. You
Yeah.
know, I mean, they were that fast. But they had that decision, that foundation that you need with any project that you're embarking upon. Let's do it. And third, they took action, and they took action quickly. They didn't wait until something was ready. They took whatever action they could take today to move that forward. And
Yeah.
there's always something you can do. You don't have to wait for your business cards to make calls. You don't have to wait for your website to start moving forward. There's things that you can do. Yes, maybe those things are important, but in the process of doing that, keep moving forward. So they did that. They took action. And when they did, all of them met with failures and things that didn't work. But what they looked at was, it's like Kevin Harrington told me one day. He said, what I know about you, he said, you make a decision to do something, you move forward. If you run into an obstacle, you take a step to the left or right and keep moving forward. You
Yeah.
don't let that obstacle bother you. And that's so true. And that's the power of letting go instead of getting stuck with the obstacle. So when they're confronted with that, the average person weighs out the pain of moving forward and changing to the pain of where they're at right now.
Yeah.
They hate where they are, but they're comfortable. They don't like being comfortable, but they are. But then they weigh out this pain and they go, that's going to be more uncomfortable. Mean I got to go talk to people? You mean I got to go do this? I got to go raise money or whatever it is. And they choose this one. So you gotta be willing to endure the pain. Do you think it was painful that I went out to 3,650 people and most all of them told me no?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to where I think I expected to get a no.
Yeah.
But you know what? I look back on it today. People ask me how I handle rejection. I said, I did that when I was a youngster. I did
Right.
it 3,650 times. I don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think about rejection. Somebody says no, I'm going, okay, let's move on.
Yeah.
You know, it's you don't carry that no into your next sales call. You
Yeah.
know?
Yeah, I sold
So
recruitment. Yeah, I sold recruitment during the coronavirus and oil crisis. Nobody was hiring, so I got my fair share of no's, and even before that.
absolutely. But you just gotta keep moving, man.
Yeah.
And then they all had that ability to let go,
Yeah.
to disconnect from what didn't work and just keep coming up with new ideas. They just say, instead of a failure, they just go, okay, that didn't work that way. Let's figure out something else. And instead of focusing on that didn't work, you know, nobody, everybody said no, so the business is not going to work for me. You know, it's when you make a decision to do something, it's like a full circle. And most people leave a little opening at the top. And that's their escape route. That's
Yeah.
their excuse. That's their way out, just in case it doesn't work.
Yeah.
But I can tell you one thing, if you leave that opening, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
It just won't. So, you know, and the last thing that they all had in common, they loved enterprise. They loved achievement. They loved doing things better and accomplishing things. And I think as human beings, we're built to do that. We're built to do it. And, you know, it's interesting watching people. I'm fascinated.
Yeah.
But
Yeah. So rejection is a common challenge in personal and professional growth. What is the best way to conquer the fear of rejection and keep moving forward?
Well, of course, that is the power of letting go, because you've got to see it for what it is. And I call it self-observation. And that's more than self-awareness. Self-awareness doesn't do much for you. Self-awareness tells you you got a problem. You can be aware that you got to know, but what are you going to do about that? Self-observation lets you see yourself in it. Lets you see yourself about to let fear take you off course, or see yourself taking the no into the next appointment. So it's really the power of being self-observant, of backing off and go, there I am doing this again. I look at it kind of like, if you're driving down the street and you see a sign that says, let's say there's a stoplight, and there's a sign that says right turn on red after stop. And we've all seen that. My question is, would you just go on through that without stopping? And
No.
maybe you do occasionally, and maybe you get by with it. Maybe there's nobody there. But if you do it often enough, you're going to get hit.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Because it says right turn on red after stop. So the question is, when you got to know, or whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, stop. When you feel that negativity, stop. And ask yourself, if I proceed in this direction, where is it going to take me? It's going to take me away from where I want to go. So I need to let go of that and move over here. And that's success at anything is really that simple.
Yeah. I like how you boil it down and you simplify things. That's what I'm pretty well known for too. Just
Got to keep
common
it simple,
sense.
man.
Yeah, common sense, simple answers.
If you got to get on the side of the road and lay down on a blanket to be able to let go, then it's not going to work. You got to be able to do it while you're driving down the road. My brother-in-law calls me one day, and he's in traffic in LA, and he just called me up, frustrated, and he said, "Oh man," he said, "I'm in this traffic." He said, "It's so terrible, this bumper to bumper. I got this appointment, I can't get to it, and I'm afraid I'm going to be late. It's really important." And I said, "Patrick." He said, "What?" And I said, "Where are you right now?" He said, "I'm in the damn traffic." And I said, "Oh, sounds like you're part of the problem." And he goes, "Wow." He said, "I never thought about it that way."
That's
I said,
good.
"You're part of the traffic." I said, "You can't control it. Just let go, man. Open your sunroof and get a little fresh air." And he called me later. He said, "After we talked, it was like 1 minute and the traffic opened up." I said, "Well, maybe that was the reason. Who knows?" So
Wow.
I said, "But it brought your sanity back." And he said, "I made my appointment on time as well."
Awesome. Awesome. Well, a couple more questions and then we can kind of wrap up. But as a expert in peak performance and personal empowerment, you've impacted millions of lives through your seminars. Could you share a particularly heartwarming or inspiring story of how your teachings have changed someone's life?
There's been so many of my
Yeah. Take a moment.
one that always pops in my mind. I mean, I've helped a lot of people get out of abusive relationships and things like that, but one that pops in my mind was this woman that came into one of my events, and she was the last person through the door, and she was so big she could barely make it through the door. But she was only about, looked like maybe 5 feet tall, if that. And she had a cane to walk, and she could barely get around. And there were seats up on the front row, so she comes up and sits down on the front row. And we started up the event, and I went around the room and just kind of get to know the room. What brings you here? What would you like to accomplish? That type of thing. I come to her and I said, "Well, what brings you here?" She said, "I have no clue." I said, "What, did you wander in off the street or what?" She said, "Well, no." She said, "My best friend, whom I really respect, told me I need to buy a ticket and come to this event." He said, "So I'm here. I don't know why." I said, "Okay, we'll figure it out as we go along." So I later, about hour and a half into the event, I was working with a couple of people and helping them to let go of something. And I walked past her, and she said, "I think I know why I'm here." I said, "Why is that?" She said, "Well, I want to lose 180 pounds." And I said, "Well, we're not a weight loss seminar, but I said, see what we can do." And I handle people, everybody differently in some way. So it just came to mind what I did with her. I said, "Are you open for a little exercise?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Are you open for me to ask you a few questions first?" "Yeah." I said, "Do you really want to let go of that weight?" She said, "I think so." I said, "No, it's a yes or a no." And she finally said, "Yes." I said, "Are you willing to let go of it?" And she said, "I think I am." And I said, "No." It's a yes or a no. And she finally said, "Yes." And I said, "When are you willing to start?" I said, "Because it's not hanging on to you. You're hanging on to it." And she said, "Well, I think the right answer is now." I said, "Okay." So I said, "Let's do this little exercise." So I took a flip chart. I drew a line down the middle. On the left side, I wrote benefits of taking the weight off. On the right side, I put benefits of keeping the weight on. I went to the first side, and she said, "Well, I'd feel better. So give me a benefit for keeping it on. Can't think of anything." So long story short, this took a long time. I
Yeah.
went through 6.5 pages of that flip chart on the left side and nothing on the right side,
Yeah.
down to the point where she said, "I can't think of another benefit without repeating myself," which she'd already done a few times anyway, but she says, "I just can't think of anything." I said, "Well, no problem. Give me a benefit for keeping the weight on." And she said, she stopped for a minute, and I knew she was about to come up with something.
Yeah.
And she hesitated for like probably a full minute. And finally, she looks up at me and she said, "I wouldn't have to have men touching me." I said, "Oh, why is that?"
Wow.
"You're going to be the first." She said, "I'm, in my mid-50s now." And she said, "When I was 13, she said, I was a cheerleader. And I was walking home from a football game one night and I got gang raped by three football players."
Yeah.
And she said, "I never told anybody. And I went home that night, didn't tell my parents." And she said, "I vowed to myself to never let a man touch me ever again in my whole life."
Wow.
And she said, "I thought if I could maybe gain weight, get fat," she said, "I wouldn't be appealing to a man." So she
Yeah.
said, "I just started eating. I just
Wow.
stuffed myself with anything I could find. And
Wow.
I just ate and ate and ate. And that's where I am now." She said, "I go on weight loss programs. I've been on probably 30 of them at least. And nothing ever works anyway because I don't know if I want it to work."
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, do you want it to work this time? Do you want to let go of that weight? So give me a yes or no." And she said, "Yes." I said, "Okay, we're going to do a little exercise here. We're going to work with you a little bit." And I said, "I want you to close your eyes and I want you to go back to that event when it happened. I want to put yourself there in every way, the way it happened." And she did. She closed her eyes and immediately broke down and just in one of those deep sobs. And I let her work through that a little bit, told her to take some deep breaths. And then she kind of came out of that. I talked with her for a little bit and I said, "Let's go back again." And we went back four or five times. And the fifth time, I think it was, I said, "I want you to, when you go back," I said, "I want you to look for an object that you can move in your mind's eye, that you can move it and see yourself moving that object." He said, "Okay." So I took her back. And when she came back, and she's still upset to some degree, but feeling a little better. And I said, "Did you find an object?" She said, "My sweater." "And did you move it?" "Yes." I said, "Okay." So we kept going back I went through 10 times of going back until finally I said, "How do you," each time I said, "How do you feel now?" And it started where she was down low is where her pain was. And she also shared with me she had pain in both thighs down the inside of her legs and had since she was 13. And as I worked with her, the pain kept moving up, moving up, moving up to right up in here. And
Wow.
the last time it was, she said, came out of it, and she said, I feel really good.
Wow.
I said, okay, now let's let go of that feeling. And she resisted. She said, oh, no, I don't want to let go of the good feeling. I want to feel good. I said, no, do you trust me? And she said, 100%. And I said, then close your eyes, take a deep breath. And when you breathe out, I want you to put that good feeling out to the whole audience. See it helping everybody in the room. And she did. And then I said, what do you feel now? And she said, I feel tingling from head to toe.
Wow.
I said, okay, we'll leave it at that. And she said, but what do I do now? And I said, don't do anything. Just go about your life. Well, what about the weight? I said, just go about your life. I said, but one thing I do want to do, let's exchange phone numbers. And so we did right there. And I said, I want to stay in touch with you. And if you have something come up, I want you to call me. Well, 30 days later, she called me. Actually, the 30th day, she said, I've lost 30 pounds in 30 days.
Wow.
With no diet. And I said, that is cool. And we talked over the next 5 or 6 months. In 7.5 months, she lost 180 pounds with no dieting.
Right.
Simply by being willing to let that weight go.
Yeah.
And she said, I have no idea how I did it. She said, it just happened. And then she sent me a picture of her. Beautiful woman. But you couldn't tell with all the weight on.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years, or about a year after that, she sent me a note that she got married.
Wow.
And was, you know, just it was beautiful. And
yeah.
And I stayed in touch with for a couple of years after that. And I haven't heard from her since. But to me, that was a major thing, you know, for her. I mean, to go through her whole life like that. And I've worked with a lot of people who's been raped and traumatic things happen to them in their life. And, you know, it happens.
Yeah.
But the problem is we make it, we continue to let it happen in our lives and it's not real anymore.
Yeah.
Unless you make it real and, got to get back to your true nature of who you are.
Yeah. And address these things, you know, she probably hadn't thought about that in years.
You don't know how to
slipped her mind.
You know, she made a firm decision.
Yeah.
Not to ever let a man touch her again in her whole life.
Yeah.
And that was so firm that, you know, she just went about her life that way. And in her mind, she saw the problem. She was aware that she was overweight. She was aware that she struggled to walk. She was aware that she had pain down her legs, which she didn't have anymore after that session, completely went away.
Yeah.
So that's why she went on diets and things like that to kind of fake her out. It's like that opening. I'll go on a diet, but it didn't work for me. Yeah. Diets never worked for me. You know, it's like that.
Yeah.
So, you got to get to the core
of
what's really going on. If something's stopping you in their life, and everybody has a problem, everybody has a core belief that they deal with. They just don't know they're dealing with it.
Yeah. Until they do that deep dive. Well, one more question and then I'll let you go. But, you know, branding is essential for personal development. Could you offer some budget-friendly tips on how to effectively brand oneself? I feel like it's a great question for you.
You know, it depends on your business that you're in, but you want to brand yourself with people just like I did. You know, I mean, if you look at my website, you'll see endorsements from Tony Robbins and Les Brown and Jim Rohn and Harv Eker and, you know, 6 or 8 different people on there that are well-known names out there that I've worked with that's endorsed me.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you connect yourself with people like that, it raises your credibility.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, just a good branding tool to get to know people even if you don't get to know them, I mean, the reason we started the Cracking the Rich Code book series was exactly that, to help people with PR, marketing, branding, and lead generation. If you don't have that in any business, you're out of business. I don't care if you're opening a restaurant or a coaching business, you need those things. And so that's why we started that, is to help people get branded while they're in the process of creating the credibility that they have and, you know, building a name for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jim. You've been such a pleasant guest and I'm just so grateful to have this time with you and be able to help share your story and your insights with more people.
Can I leave them with one thing?
Yes, sir.
This is something I try to leave everybody with because it's so important, I think. Years back, you may have heard it on if you watched one of my interviews someplace, but years back, a friend of mine and I used to read the same books, and then we would get on the phone or get together and discuss those books and try to learn from each other, what this meant or what that meant. We were reading a really in-depth book, and we were on, he called me one day, and we were on one page for like 2 hours. And before we hung up, he said, Jim, he said, what do you think the word resourceful means? I said, I don't know. I said, maybe using your imagination or being more productive. I said, I don't know. Never really thought about it. I said, why? Why do you ask? And he said, well, it's just an interesting word. I said, yeah, I guess so. And that was it. We hung up. Later, I was driving home and I couldn't quit thinking about the word. And it was back before we had the internet. It's been 35 years ago or something. And couldn't quit thinking about it. So as soon as I get home, I go to the dictionary and I look up the word. And it's defined as once again full of source, resourceful. I thought, oh, that's pretty interesting, depending on what you think source means. So I looked up the keyword source, and it was defined as where all things originate. It didn't say some things, it said all things originate in source. And I thought, wow, that's pretty powerful if depending again on what you think source is. And the next day, I went to a bookstore, and I tried to look up origin of words, other interpretations of it from other languages, and looked in other dictionaries. And I became obsessed for about a year and a half with that word, with source, trying to find another definition other than where all things originate, which was very powerful. And I was in the UK in a small village called Chester. Walking down the street, and I see a little sign over top of a back door that said antique books. And I was always intrigued by old books anyway. So I walked in the back door, and the first book I see is a dictionary about a foot thick. And it was all tattered and torn. I don't know how old it was. I wish I'd looked at the date on it, but I didn't. But it was well used. But it had a sign on it that said, do not open. But I thought that was for people in the UK. So I went ahead and opened it to the S's, and I was prepared to buy it, I think. I don't know what it would cost, but so I opened it up and I looked up the word source. And it had some of the same things I'd seen before, but one definition popped: source, love. And I went, wow, once again, full of love. And I thought, well, how do you take that and apply it in the real world today? I thought about it for a little bit and I thought, when you make a decision to do something, to have something, to start a new project, to write a book, to whatever it is you're looking for, take a vacation. When you make a decision, you fall in love with it. You create passion, and that's where it comes from. The passion comes from falling in love with that project. And I thought, wow, that is powerful. Then it hit me. I thought, there's a flaw in that. If everything is created from love, where does fear come from? Took me about 2 minutes. And I thought, oh, we fall in love with fear. We fall in love with it. We're creating it out of love. So we fall in love with fear. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And then I, about a year after that, I was in Toronto doing an event, and I went out for a walk with a friend of mine. He and I'm 6'4" and he's about 6'2", and we were out a little bit too far, and we were hoofing it back pretty fast because we were going to be late for the event. Of course, we were the event, so they couldn't start without us, but we still had to get back. And I felt his presence right over my shoulder. It's like somebody walking right next to me with his face about right here. And I could smell the guy. And I was just about to turn around and go, hey, buddy, back off a little bit. He was right. I mean, I could smell his odor. And just as I did, this guy had two voices coming from him. And the first voice said, "And God created man." And the other voice said, "I know that." And he said, "But then God created woman." He said, "Yeah." The other voice said, "I know that too." And he said, "But then God created fruit." And the other voice said, "Fruit? What does fruit have to do with anything?" And the other voice goes, "Well, inside the fruit," he said, "there's a seed." And he said, "If you plant it, it will grow." And he said, "If you don't, it won't." So my point is, where do you plant the seed? Is the decision you make, that's the seed. And you plant it in love where all things originate. You fall in love with it. And the things that create fear, that's where the power of letting go comes in. So my question is for people, are you truly in love with what it is you want to become? Or is it just a one-night stand for you?
Wow, so profound. I love it. It's such a beautiful story. I'm so glad you snuck it in there on us.
I always like to leave that for people. It's so
Tell me, where can the audience get in touch with you? What links would you like for me to share?
well, you can reach me at jimbritt.com. That's two T's, BRITT, jimbritt.com. You can find the Cracking the Rich Code online program helping you to get rid of your money blocks at crackingtherichcode.com. You'll also probably find it on my website too, but you can go direct there. It's got a lot of great videos and testimonies on there. And if you're interested in talking to me about being one of our co-authors, go to becomeacoauthor.com, and you'll see an overview of everything that we offer our co-authors, and there'll be a place on there you can book an appointment right at the end of that too. So yeah, those are places you can find me.
Thank you, sir. I'll put the links below, and thank you for your time. I really enjoyed this with you.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tim. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.